This is February 23rd, year 2004. This is Art Hovey talking this afternoon with Robert W. Brennan on the subject of the University of Wisconsin Research Park and his involvement in the early stages of it. Before we get to that, Bob, you want to just give us a little background on your career after you graduated from the university and how you eventually came to the place where you would be involved with a project like this?
Sure. After I graduated from the university, I spent a couple years in a high school coaching and then came back here for 8 years as the assistant and then head track coach at the university. Left athletics, went to work for Bill Dyke, who was the mayor of the city for a couple years. Ended up serving as his chief of staff. Spent 2 years with Bill Dyke, 3.5 months with Paul Soglin in his first term. In the process of that, the chamber exec was fired, and I was hired to go to the Chamber of Commerce, and I was there for 31 years before I came back to campus. And when I was in the mayor's office after leaving intercollegiate athletics, I was trying to figure out what you should do as a mayor's aide, and one of the things they talked about was obviously economic development. I looked all over City Hall for 2 years and never could find anything that related to some kind of a plan for economic development for the city of Madison. Everybody always pointed back to the growth of the university, the Madison campus, as the emphasis to make that happen. And quite honestly, doing a quick summary, I think the best economic indicator we ever had up until that time was the GI Bill. There was about 8,000 students here on this campus after the Second World War, and the real emphasis was GIs coming back with that and coming to school, and quite honestly, over a period of time, we went to a height of about 45,000 Southern students. And in the community, I think, took that more or less for granted, never figured out what would ever happen if that kind of growth that was being stimulated on campus ever stopped. Well, lo and behold, we went through a volatile election during those Vietnam War years. Paul Soglin gets elected. I'm hired by the Chamber of Commerce to take it. They fired the guy in front of me, and I came in. And when I went into the chamber in the beginning, the board was made up of some very fine individuals, but very solidly retail-oriented. And what had happened was, over the period of time, Bob Warren, who was Attorney General at the time, gave a 18-year-old vote to roughly 45,000 students that had never voted before, and it caught the community, especially the business community, a little off guard. So when I went to the chamber, I inherited a board that was really made up of a lot of very fine people: Jess Hyman, Bob Schmitz, Al Goldstein, all retailers. And they would sit in there and talk about retail events. Who was going to play Santa Claus next year? Maxwell Street, we had no governmental outreach to see could happen in a political election. And they also didn't have an economic development plan. The retailers would do their inventory at the end of January, find out they sold more t-shirts this year than they did last year. And if you get the phrase there, that was kind of the whole attitude in the community. Pat Lucy was governor when I first came into the chamber, and one of the first things he did was merge the university into a system. I got to know the chancellor, Ed Young, pretty good during those initial years, because when I was coaching, half my track team was black, African-American kids, and we were winning, and the kids were moderately happy. And not to be coy, but I think the chancellor thought that I had maybe a magic wand with some of those, because we had some very volatile times on campus. And so periodically he invited me to certain kinds of meetings, some of the sensitivity meetings that we had on campus, so I got to know the chancellor very well. So now I'm at the chamber, and he calls me one day. I come up, sit down, and talk to him. There wasn't anybody really from the Madison campus that ever sat on the chamber board. And I mentioned that to him. Well, I suggest that if they hadn't been for merger, he might not have been as interested in coming to sit on the board, because prior to merger, they had more of a control of their future than they did potentially under what would happen in merger. So to make a long story short, the chancellor became a member of our board. In fact, today, after 31 years, whoever the chancellor is has always had a permanent seat on the chamber board. Okay, so then after I got there, I'm still looking for this economic development a plan for Madison that the city didn't have and that the chamber certainly didn't have. And I needed a couple people that kind of opened doors for me because, quite honestly, the chamber board was not made up of a lot of the top business leaders. So I recruited Dave Carley, who at that time was Mr. Democrat in the state of Wisconsin. He lived in Madison. And Reed Coleman, who at the same time was Mr. Republican, who also lived in Madison. And used those two guys my first years to run interference for me, to sort of, if I could get the two of them to sign a letter to invite people to it, people would usually come because they couldn't believe that Reed and Dave could agree on anything. Well, Dave Carley had foresight into the future, and 30 years ago was talking about what everybody is basically today, technology transfer and building kind of a plan related to it. And he was only with me for 1 year. He left town after that first year, went down to run the old, what was the old Marquette Medical School, yeah. and he left his notes, and I picked them up and started running with it, and more or less trying to convince people that it was my idea. No, I mean, but it was David's basically outline and understanding of this whole thing. About that same time, Bob Spiegel, who was editor of the Wisconsin State Journal, came to Madison. And he had been in Des Moines, Iowa when I was coaching. And in 1971, my last year of coaching, we won the National Indoor Federation Championship. And in Des Moines, Iowa, the Drake Relays is really a big event. And the Des Moines Tribune is the backbone of that whole event. And Bob Spiegel had been a editor of that paper. And even till today, Bob is still the historians of the Drake Relays. And he wrote a very complimentary article about myself and my team in 1971. And so I had some kind of relationship with him. And one day I picked up the paper. Now I'm in the chamber in Madison. And I look at the new editor of the Wisconsin State Journal coming to Madison. I look and I say, hey, that's my friend Bob Spiegel, who used to be in Des Moines. So Bob came to Madison, and I was one of the few people that he knew, and he came in to see me one day, and he said, I used to come in here to cover Iowa football, and I drove up East Washington Avenue. There's a lot of empty buildings and things. What's going on here? So with great pride, I rolled out Dave Carley's plan, which I told him was my plan. No, but I mean, rolled out Dave Carley's plan. And Spiegel became very much interested in that. And I'm jumping through a lot of things quickly here. You can ask me more specific questions. But so we started talking about the kind of things we needed to do to really enhance that graduate school and the kind of community involvement we needed to have to build the bridge to make it successful. And one day I got a phone call from Bob, and he said, you know, I was a regent at Drake University, and Bill Friday was the president of Drake. He's no longer there. He's down in North Carolina at North Carolina. How about if I call him and you and I go down there and find out how they built the Golden Triangle down in North Carolina between North Carolina, North Carolina State, and Duke? And I said, great, let's do it. So he called and set it up. Bob O'Malley was the chairman of my board. He was at that time the president of United Bank, which was a bank in Madison. We took him along. And I went to see the chancellor, and the chancellor's aide was Joel Skornicka. And so the four of us went to North Carolina under the invitation of Bill Friday, the president of North Carolina, and for 3 days they rolled out the carpet for us. And the centerpiece of their whole operation was a very successful research park called the Golden Triangle between those three schools. So we went down there, we spent the 3 days with him, came back with an outline, brought it back, went to see Ed Young at that time, who was in transition between chancellor to president of the system. And to make a long story short, we...
So what was this? What year was this approximately?
Well, this would have been...
78 was when he was going to...
Yeah, I think it was 78, yeah.
Okay.
And And we presented this idea of what we needed to do, and the cornerstone was to form what today we call a technology council, a umbrella organization to pull together some of the activities and try to give it some kind of direction. So we did that. We called it Wisconsin for Research. And our first president of that was Reed Coleman. Well, maybe we were a little ahead of our time. It was an effort. Art, you were involved, you know all about
yeah.
that. It struggled, eventually crashed and burned.
Why do you think it did?
Well, I think the reason it didn't work was it was something relatively new, and we were bringing together two segments of the community that really weren't that used to working with each other at that time, business community and the university community. Irv Shane came in because Ed Young left to go to System. Irv came in, and there were a number of other things. It just wasn't quite right. So it fizzled and it didn't quite make it. But like any entrepreneurial effort, sometimes it doesn't make it the first time, but you try it again. After about 5 years, we tried again with something called the Science and Technology Council. It didn't make it. Now we've got our third effort at it, which is the Wisconsin Technology Council, headed by Tom Still, which is gaining momentum and working well. But back to that first effort, we couldn't quite get this council idea together, but we worked very hard at trying to get across the idea of a research park, a place that we could nurture some of these technology transfers that were prevalent on campus and tying them together in some kind of a private sector entity. One of our first hurdles was that the area that we picked, sort of that we thought was the perfect site, was the old Reeder and Charmany Farms, which were held in high esteem by the Ag School, and Glenn Palm, who was one of the great deans of the Ag School, fought very hard to keep those because obviously faculty members wanted to grow crops and get back to campus, and that was a struggle for a period of time. Some of our friends, even in City Hall, were kind of reluctant to some of the kinds of elements that we went through with. But over a period of time, we were able to piece this together. The chancellor and other people on campus were able to convince Glenn Pound that there were other sites that he could.
Did you have any contact with then Chancellor Irv Shane in these initial stages, you personally, in trying to discuss this further?
Yeah, I think because Irv, like I said, every chancellor was on the chamber board, and at that time you were still in the chancellor's office.
Yeah.
Joel Skornicka was still up there, and we just kept talking basically about it, and I think more and more people became interested in making something like that more or less happen. We went through a period of time a little bit where some of the developers in the area, who were also members of the chamber, were not overly excited about it, but we felt that from our experiences of watching what had happened in other places, but more specifically North Carolina, that we still really needed this because that link together with the university really made it a special effect, and it was different than going into having just some developer basically do it.
Had you expanded the scope of the membership of the chamber board by this time to include people beyond the retail sector that you were talking about earlier?
Well, that was one of the first things we did, was to enlarge the base of membership within the
yeah.
chamber. How do I say this delicately? We were able to assign an awful lot of people to the chamber that had never been members before. I think a lot of people in the community still remembered the Life magazine article in 1948 and thought it was utopia and didn't need to work very hard at things. Paul Soglin turned out to be, and is today, a very good friend of mine, but Paul, in his first term as mayor, scared the business community. He was a little more liberal than they
yeah.
were used to. And that helped me a lot to increase the membership and the breadth of what we were attempting to do. And then I'd like to think too that we used that merger to develop more of a town and gown relationship, because Madison campus realizing that they had to develop more support to get some of the things that maybe they didn't think that they needed prior to merger. So we started to build a pretty good
base. This was a special campaign of yours, wasn't it? You recognized that the future of the community and the university was intertwined. Is that reasonable to say?
Yeah, I think so, mainly because I grew up here and I had a strong feeling for the university. And with David Carley's, and I give David an awful lot of credit, because David really was bright, and he kind of taught me how to spell Chamber of Commerce and put some kind of direction to it. I'll jump way ahead, because here's an interesting thing that relates to the research park that really brought something to my attention that I really wasn't aware of until it happened. David Ward was chancellor at the time, and the research park. Research parks and college campuses all over the country had organized an association, and there still is one today. And so one day the chancellor called me, David Ward called me, and he said, we're going to host that conference here in Madison at the new convention center, and we'd like to have you come and do a welcome. I said, sure, I'd be happy to, because when you're the chamber exec or you're the mayor, you do all these, every time anybody has a conference, you get invited to come in. And I looked at my schedule and I said, oh, I'm sorry, Chancellor, I can't do it. I've got something else. Oh, we got to really have you. And I thought, well, this is strange, because usually you can get the mayor or you can get the head of the convention bureau or somebody else. I mean, I know I'm important, but I mean, why is it happening? And he said, no, we really, really need to have you. Well, make a long story short, it was supposed to be a kickoff on a Thursday morning. They ended up having a little reception a Wednesday night, basically so I could be there. And I'm going, gee, yeah, this is strange, but why do you want me there? So I get there, he gives me a very warm introduction, and I get up, and I find out that in a lot of college communities, the chamber fights the university in trying to put a research park together. A woman from the University of Oklahoma came up to me and she says, how did you ever do this? Well, it really wasn't that hard in Madison, because I think the university was such a solid part of the community, and the fact that we had put the chancellor on the chamber board, that over a period of time, people within the business community started to realize how important that relationship really was, so that I never even had any major second thoughts about why we shouldn't join together with the university. But from that experience, which I hopefully explained it now, I see why David wanted me to stand there, because it was a feather sort of in his hat by saying, well, the chamber's in relationships with us, because as the woman from Oklahoma had told me, and a number of other people in that conference, they were at odds because the local developers felt that was something, you know. So I would go back to the fact that the university community was very understanding of that, helped people from us, some of us that were in the private sector, and Wade McGowan was there during that time, Irv Shane, Joel Skornicka. That relationship got through, and quite honestly, I didn't even really thought that much about it. It was more natural here, but what I found is that those kind of relationships don't really grow together, and maybe in that regard we were a little unique, and David Ward had understood that, and that's why he was so anxious to have somebody from the chamber kind of introduce the thing and say all the good things about the research part.
Meanwhile, your technology council, as it later is named, is moving forward after Wisconsin for Research is unsuccessful in building a base from which to operate. So how was that interfacing then with the research park?
A textbook type effort, if you went and took what North Carolina did and brought it back, would have said the first thing you do is develop a technology technology council, which I like to always say is kind of like an umbrella of which all the activity in that arena goes under. We couldn't get that quite off the ground. So one day, while I'm struggling with this, because as I said, the first two efforts crashed and burned, and the one we're doing now is the third effort. The first, Bob Bach, the
graduate school.
No, the business day.
Oh, business.
There were two Bachs.
Right.
Bachs.
Yeah.
One day, business Bach came in to see me at the chamber, and he said, "I just came back from the University of Michigan, and they're really doing some interesting things." And I said, what are they doing? He says, "They're running venture fairs. Their business school is taking entrepreneurs and putting on an event where the venture capitalists can come in and see 10 or 12 presentations on one day, and if a venture capitalist or an angel investor likes on it, they can link it together." And I said, "Well, let's do it here." So Business Bach and the university and the chamber put together what we now call the WIN Foundation, Wisconsin Innovation Network.
What year was this?
We just finished our 20th one last year.
83.
Yeah. So, and Bob Marshall, the former dean of the School of Engineering, had left the engineering school and was heading up UIR, which is kind of where
you are now.
Yeah. And so the three of us put on the first venture fair that we'd ever had in the Madison area, based upon our idea we took from Michigan.
Let's just pause for a moment.
Yep.
For the record, you have retired from the chamber, and now you are a member of the university staff. You want to explain briefly?
UIR was...
University Industry Research Program.
Right. Was the present chancellor, John Wiley, dissolved that back in about May of this last year, 03, and developed a new outreach program, corporate outreach, which is being run right out of his office now. And I'm a new member of that. In fact, John Wiley came and talked to me about June of last year, and wanted to know if I would be interested in coming over here and working with Charlie Hoslett and the staff that John Wiley has put together, which is really basically today is kind of a three-stool effort: WARF, Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, Chancellor's Office, and the Research Park as kind of the top portion of that, with all the deans, probably more specifically business and engineering, but all of the other deans as kind of a window, a contact between the private sector, the business community, statewide and even nationally, and to a certain extent internationally, and the Madison campus.
And part of that is what you've just been talking about, this entrepreneurial venture capital dimension, which one wants to encourage.
Right, because in the process of going through the budget this last year, I worked closely with the Madison campus and working with the legislatures and the governors in a very tight fiscal situation, and basically saying to them, you can't tax yourself out of the financial problem that we're in the state. You have to feed the economic engines that we have within this state, and that's the way we're going to have to work it out. And the best economic engine in this state is the graduate school, the Madison campus. And so eventually we got to the point, in essence, saying, don't cut us anymore. We can, we're already providing a great engine for the future of this state. We can even do better. And that's what led the chancellor to raising the level of what we're supposed to be doing here in our corporate outreach. And any great graduate school has the capacity of being on the cutting edge of the new technologies and providing, whether it's two graduate students walking off a campus with an idea or faculty members, and enhancing that technology transfer to increase the base. Now I'll go back to Bob Bach and Bob Marshall and I.
Right.
So we ran our very first venture fair under the guidance of those two gentlemen, with help from the chamber, and we did it ourselves. And Tony Earle was governor, and he found out about it, and he came in to see me and said, "That's great. We need to do more of that. Can we do it statewide?" And I said, "Well, we ran the very first one, which included Bill Linton from ProMega, which turns out to be, he went through that very first one, a very successful high-tech company here in the Madison area. Jan Eddy, who now runs Wingo Technology, was an entrepreneur in that very, very first one. And the governor said, well, can we do it statewide? I said, yes, but I funded it all out of memberships in Dane County. Well, we'll become a partner with you. So they funded us through WEDA, Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority, to the tune of about $60,000 to be matched by an equal amount from the Greater Madison Chamber. And the second year, we ran one statewide in conjunction with state government. Well, then that was only 1 year, and then Tommy Thompson came in. I ran it 14 years with Tommy Thompson, a couple of years with McCallum, and now Jim Doyle is carrying it through.
Still the same share of the expenses?
Share, yes, yes. 50%, and I think the most I ever got from, and then it went to the Department of Commerce. Now it's a partnership with them. I think the most we ever got at one time was $75,000. The smallest we ever got was $60,000. Well, in a perfect world, you would have started the Technology Council first, and then you would have put the Wind Foundation, which was the Venture Fair, under that as one of the programs. But we couldn't get the Tech Council off the ground, so I carried that Wind Foundation, which was the Venture Fair, under the Chamber flag until I was able to get Tom Still, and Mark Buehr and I did the recruiting on that, got Tom Still to be the executive director of the Wisconsin Technology Council.
Tom Still coming from?
The Wisconsin State Journal as a
editorial
writer for that. We needed somebody who could market this idea, somebody who had great credibility throughout the state with journalists, which he does and has, and is very articulate, and someone that we had used in when we ran the economic summits that we've run for 3 or 4 years now with help of the Board of Regents and system. Tom has been the moderator of that, so we had a statewide presence. So we hired Tom to take over the Technology Council, and then after I was, and then I housed it in the Chamber of Commerce here in Madison. In fact, Tom is still there. And then when I was convinced that that was on stable ground, we moved the Wind Foundation out of the chamber, and I took it over and put it underneath Tom. And so now that Venture Fair...
Underneath who?
Underneath Tom Still and the Wisconsin Technology Council.
Yeah,
so
well,
it's a program under there now.
Okay.
I'm on the board of directors. I'm still on the board of directors for it, and we will be working very closely with that with that entity here in our present operation at the OCR, the
Corporate Relations
Program.
Yeah.
So all of those entities have been an integral part of strengthening those kinds of relationships. Mark Buehr, who is the present director of the research part, I worked very closely with him because he was with the governor. He ran the Department of Administration, and that's indirectly where I got my money. It came out of to run the Wind Foundation. It came out of the Department of Commerce department, but it had to be approved by the governor, and it came out of the Department of Administration.
Yeah.
So that relationship was strong, and now Tom Mark Buehr is the chairman of the board of Tom Still's Technology Council. I sit on that board. In fact, we actually helped put it together. In fact, there's an interesting quick little story about how we eventually got the governor interested in making a shot at the third effort here to build this umbrella TORP organization. The state of Wisconsin under Tommy had people who represented the state of Wisconsin in a lot of foreign countries. We had somebody in Germany, we had a man in Tokyo, we had a man in Seoul, Korea. And the man in Seoul, Korea was a gentleman by the name of Dr. Bong K, who had gotten his master's degree from Madison, and I had an opportunity to meet him a couple of times. And when he was retiring from that position, he came to Madison, met with Governor Thompson, and in the course of the conversation, I was not in this particular meeting, but the story was that he had four or five Korean leaders with him, and up until that time, they hadn't really done much entrepreneurial-wise in the Pacific Rim. The idea was everybody went to work for Mitsubishi or Sony, and then the market started to fall. And in that conversation with the governor, Dr. Kay said, "Governor Thompson, what do you do when you've got something like 23 young execs that have to be let go from Mitsubishi or whatever the company was?" And the governor said, "Well, we've got a great program here in Madison that I run with the Chamber of Commerce in Madison that I have fun." And he talked about the Wind Foundation. To make a long story short, the Korean government was willing to pay our way to go to Korea to do a seminar on how to run a venture fair. And so they came over to see me, and I was, oh my God, I'm scared of that. I mean, how are we going to put something together so good that we're going to fly to Seoul? I mean, I was a little scared about it. I called Bob Pricer, who was a professor at the university business school, and I said, "Bob, what am I going to do?" And he said, "Don't worry about it. We do this kind of stuff all the time. Great." Went over to see Bob Pricer, and he said, "Oh, this is no problem. We do this all the time. We can do this." So to make a long story short, Bob, we put together 12 people handpicked that would be the nucleus of our trip to Korea to put this on for the Korean government. And in the process of this, Dick Leeser, who was the head of WHARF at the time, was one of the people on our 12-member committee.
And what year is this?
Oh, gosh. That would have been in 1999. Okay. And I found out in the process that Dick Leeser was getting ready to retire from WHARF. I learned that in the process. Okay. The Korean government paid us. We took about 12 of us over, and they paid our way over, and we put on the seminar. Well, whether it was, I mean, they thought it was good, but the best part about it was what it did for the 12 of us to really get together and work on an issue. Well, the Koreans wrote all kinds of letters back to the governor. "Oh, this was terrific, this is terrific." So Tommy G calls me up. "Oh, you guys were great, blah, 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 blah." And I said, "Okay, governor, that is. And the thing that I've been talking to you about for a long time is we still need that technology council, okay? If we're gonna take this stuff to the next level, we need this umbrella organization. This is in his second to the last state of the state." Well, in the meantime, Dick Leeser was retiring, and I convinced Leeser that he should be our first executive director. Well, his credibility as the head of WHARF and the whole thing, Tommy agreed. And so when we had our state of the state, Leeser and I are sitting on the upper deck of the Capitol, and he introduces us as starting this new technology council, and that Dick Leeser was going to be our first director, and that the legislature would put together $250,000 to be matched by another $250,000 from the private sector to launch this technology council.
Okay, let's talk about that private sector now. Are you expanding beyond Madison?
Yes.
To the,
yes.
The whole state?
It's
here?
A,
when does that start to take place?
Well, that
in this
is.
Context?
Well, that started immediately because when we talked about the technology, that was agreed to be a statewide effort to start off with. Even the venture fair, the Wind Foundation, that's why we call it the Wind Foundation, because it was Wisconsin Innovation Network. Mm-hmm. The heart of that whole thing was obviously the graduate school here in Madison.
Yeah.
But to get money from the state for the venture fair and to get money for the technology council, we had to convince people that it was a statewide effort. Okay, so the governor announced it. At that time, Jensen was the leader of the assembly. It went through the assembly like that because it was controlled by the Republicans. Everybody said he'll never get it through the Senate because Chuck Quala was leading up the Senate at the time. The Green Bay Packers were one of the big issues coming through for funding. Dick Leeser and I went up and met with Chuck Quala. He loved the idea. We beat the Green Bay Packers through the Senate in getting the funding. Okay. So it was both sides of the aisle, we were able to announce it. And we kicked it off, and Dick served very well as our first director.
Now the administrative offices are still at the chamber, is that correct?
Yeah. Our hope is someday that it will grow to the point where there won't be Rainwoman anymore and it'll move to some other place, maybe here or maybe the research park or somewhere, but right now it's over there. And in the beginning it was important because Tom and I kind of, it was kind of an idea that we started and we were sort of working together on it. Now with some of us over here, it isn't as important anymore for it to be there, because now with Charlie Hoslett and what we're doing here, or what Mark Buehr is doing over at the research park, it probably makes more sense to be in one of those two locations. But my story was, this little thing about going to Korea and putting this thing on gave an opportunity to get the governor's attention enough to open up a door and to put the entity together. As a part of this whole growing area was that when Tommy got ready to leave, the university was able to reach out and probably take two of the best people that the governor had still on his staff. One was Charlie Hoslett, who's here running this now. The other one was Mark Buehr, who was his Secretary of Administration. And Mark went originally right to the research park. And all those things have kind of more or less tied ourselves together, where we're starting to get to a point where we have a number of entities together that understand what we're attempting to do. Leaser turned me down about five times when I was trying to convince him to do this, because he didn't want to work full time. But he did a marvelous job of kicking this thing off the ground, until one day he came and stood in my doorway to my office and said, "I told you I wanted to work part-time." And what he did very easily, or not very easily, very, very quickly under his direction, he made it a full-time job. And then obviously he moved on. Dick is still involved with us, but he's mainly working mainly with angel investors. And that led us going through a process of where we got Tom Still. And I tell you all this because it all kind of fits together. Sure. It all started kind of like, I would say, from David Carley's initial ideas with me, Bob Spiegel and that group, Joel Skornick and a group of us who went to North Carolina, bringing it back and working with Ed Young.
Now, when you talked to Ed Young, did you just talk to him or did you give him a report?
We gave him a report, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, when we came back, the group of us put it together, and Joel Skornick and I hand-carried it up to Ed. And by that time, Ed was in the system office. And then Irv got involved with us basically too, and there were some the private sector entities were pushing a little faster than the public sector entities. You remember those things very, very carefully, because the State Journal kept running editorials.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you about. Meantime, once you get back, then Bob Spiegel starts writing editorials on a regular basis,
right,
about this,
right.
Is that correct?
Yes, which was beneficial in getting it going, because it was getting people's attention. But in the process of it, Spiegel was living in a different world than, and I don't mean to pick anybody other than what Irv Shane's responsibilities were on campus. And luckily what they was able to do is that there were a lot of people that were able to keep those two entities together in place of falling apart. Because the private sector wants to run faster than the public sector does, and I can see a little bit where some of those things, why they fall apart in a lot of campus situations, because they're really two different worlds. But to the credit of the leaderships, they were able to keep it together, and eventually, now we're, you know, in fact, it was a few years ago that we were voted by that
organization,
as the number one in the country.
One of the things, of course, that presents this problem is the number of people you have to consult with within the university to get their blessings and approval before you can go forward, which is not always true in the private sector. You can move much more rapidly.
No question. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that worked. Well, I'll tell you, if I could, I guess, for a moment. Last year, in around Thanksgiving time, well, actually, it was year before that, I got a call from Ann Arbor, Michigan, the University of Michigan. It was the Chamber of Commerce in Michigan, and the mayor and some of their business leaders, And they said they wanted to come over and visit with us in Madison because they had heard that we have a great town and gown kind of relationship. Well, you're kind of flattered when you hear some of those things. And then Ypsilanti came with them, Eastern Michigan. And so the economic development man from Ann Arbor said to me, one of the things we want to talk to you about when we come is this venture fair that you guys are running, and it's getting a reputation in Middle America. I said, sure, I'd be love to talk to you. Where do you think I got the idea from? He said, I have no idea. And I said, I got it from the University of Michigan Business School. And he said, well, they're not doing it anymore. So it just goes back to show you. And Mark Buehr and I put on a program for him over at the Research Park for the city of Ypsilanti and Eastern Michigan and their Chamber of Commerce and their mayor. Same thing with Ann Arbor. And so, it's funny tonight because here they're over talking to us about something that they want to learn about we're doing. It was something that we learned about from them in the beginning.
Well, I think the point of that is that there were two things. You say Dave Carley's initial interest, plus I think the university was all along interested in this because many of our faculty had, on their own, started little ventures of one type or another that involved technology transfer.
Right.
And so you're talking about how do you make ideas into realities, and eventually we began to sort out all the institutional problems and people developed a way of working together.
Yeah.
Effectively.
You know, I think one of the things that for anything to really work, when you've got to end it, you got to establish a need together. And I think one of the things that helped us in our town and gown thing a lot was, probably more so than anything else, was what that opportunity that merger gave the chamber and people off campus to get attention of people on campus. And I don't mean to be negative on any side of the thing, but I'm not so sure that we would have been able to put some of these things together as readily as if there wasn't merger, when the campus was self-sufficient and didn't think that it really needed anyone. And we went through a very interesting time. You remember this from your, when I first went to the chamber, I told you there was a very strong retail element in there, and they still remembered students marching up State Street throwing bricks through windows, and there was not a great town and gown feeling like there is today. And I like to think that all of my experiences in my whole life had been built around campus. I mean, this was my school, and got a chance to come back and coach at it and everything, so that I had a very positive feeling about it. And so after I left my 2 years in the mayor's office and went to the chamber, you didn't have to sell me on the school, but there were a lot of town people who were, they might go so far as to say the best thing to do is to move segments up to Sheboygan and get rid of those marches up State Street. So we went through a period like that too, where we had to mesh the two together and show people, and Art, you remember this, in fact, you were helpful in putting some of these together. We just get John Udell and Bill Strang to do the economic impact of what the Madison campus meant. And there were a lot of people during those days who didn't quite grasp that because they were all discombobulated over the Vietnam War years. And
by the same token, a lot of people at the university felt that they weren't beholden to Madison in any way, and so there was that very parochial attitude on their part, and as you suggest, the merger helped break down those barriers, but it also there was the growth of the technology on campus, and you had to find a way to spin it off, if you will, to reinforce your mission locally and nationally, for that matter.
Well, and I go back to say that the activity to build the research park was a focal point, that to be successful you needed the university community and the private sector to come together to do it, and that exercise helped mend some of those things. The other thing that was extremely important in that whole process was the whole WARF idea. There were if I might be so bold as to say, there were some days when Wharf maybe was like almost like Fort Knox in regards, and it needed to have some people. Dick Leeser opened that door. Carl Gobranson today is in that position where it really becomes a meaningful part. But the whole old vitamin D thing that started Wharf in the first place was an integral part of making this whole thing work. There's another thing that most people won't remember, but you and I will, is when the old Sage building out at Truex,
yeah.
When Phil Dersey and Wharf went out there and made that into a contract research activity. It never worked out for Wharf, and it didn't work out for Ralston Perina, and it didn't work out for Hazleton, but it's going big guns right now with Covance. And that's another research entity that really kind of started off campus, that worked its way up to where Covance is one of the bright stars in the Madison research community.
Yeah. But that was an early evidence of technology transfer too.
That's my point.
Translate the patents and the ideas into viable businesses or what have you.
Right.
And, when Ralston Perina took it over, of course, as you remember, Ray Rowland was the head of Ralston Perina and a member of the, an alumnus and a member of the board of Wharf at the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those relationships were very important.
Yeah.
Let me go back, if I can, to this moment when the university begins to decide that it is going to develop the Charmany Reader site for a research park. That took a lot of selling in the community, didn't it? And what was your involvement in that regard? What did you see as some of the issues either for or against this?
Well, one of the real assets to helping us put that together, confusing the two box. I've talked about the business box that helped us put together the venture fair. The other one was the graduate box. And graduate box understood early that this was something very beneficial, I think. Glenn Pound, I mean, Ag School is one of the pillars of America's dairy land.
Let me clarify for you that the Ag people felt that their research activities on that site were somewhat limited now because of the nature of what was being done. They wanted to move off of that site, but in doing so, they wanted to make sure that they were properly compensated for that and that they would get consideration for what they were giving up. And this is where Glenn Pound is defending his title, if you will, to that land.
Yeah. Well, from a community point of view, I think the hardest part of putting it together was probably what you just mentioned, what was happening inside of the campus.
Yeah.
Of getting Glenn and those things off. From our point of view, we had some developers in the beginning who really thought we were, you know, that the university was, if somebody went to the research park, they would get some advantages, they wouldn't go the other way. That was pretty easy to, I won't say really, but it wasn't as serious as it evidently was in some other places.
How about the neighbors and issues like that?
It's
going to change the whole.
Yeah. We went through some things in that regard. There were some problems in City Hall. Joel Scott, excuse me a second. Right. Yeah, the neighborhood, you know, anytime you do a development in an area, there's always concerns and things. If I recall, Joel Skornica was extremely helpful in that because he was coming off campus and back, as you know, eventually ran for mayor and served as a two-term mayor. And so a lot of that was handled in City Hall through Joel. We were obviously very much supporting it, but the questions really had to come off of off of campus, and obviously you were up there at that time too, you know what some of those things
yeah.
were. I'm trying to remember who the aldermen were out there at that particular time. I'm sure Joel would remember who was, because he did most of the lobbying part. But there was concern. I mean, anytime there's any kind of development that goes into an area, there's always concerns. Our biggest challenge out there was that Channel 21 had their tower there. And in fact, we had one real good prospect at one time. It was the Cetus Corporation that picked the site, and that's where they wanted to be. But some of the guy wires that would go up to hold that tower up in the wintertime would ice. And of course, when they would start to melt, it was like mortar shells coming off of there. And we had a plan to take it to a candelabra, which now we have in place outside on the other side of the belt line. But moving that...
Again, on university property.
It's on university property now. But moving that off, let's see, that would have been the Charmany farm.
No, that's the Mant farm now.
No.
Oh, moving it off Charmany.
It sat on the Charmany farm across from Channel 27.
Right.
But getting that off there, because there was a big piece of land there that we couldn't do anything with because of those guy wires, and that was a struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So your involvement in the neighborhood concerns and related matters was relatively removed from those who were immediately dealing with it.
Well, the leadership on that particular issue had to come from campus.
Yeah.
We were there holding the hand and pushing from an economic point of view.
Right.
But we eventually got through that. But anytime you do any kind of a development and there's vacant land and then somebody imagines, you know, that there's going to be some kind of testing there that's going to pollute the air or we struggled through a lot of those things.
Okay.
Paul Soglin was mayor at the time, and let me say this: Paul today would say it was a great thing, the research park. And in fact, at one of our anniversary things that Wayne used to put these together every once in a while, a 10-year deal or a friend-year deal, I stood in there with my friend Paul, and he stood up and talked about what a great effort it was and complimented Bob Spiegel, who he didn't always agree with, and me and a few others. And I just didn't say anything. I thought, you know, Paul, times change.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he changed quite a bit throughout his career.
Yeah, because he wasn't real happy in the beginning when we were trying to do some of those things. Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting story and a real success story. And I think that, you know, I don't know if this group lists every year the best research park in the country, but we were very proud of that when we won that here, because you know, nothing is easy and
what do you see for the future for the park and that type of activity?
Well, it's outgrown the present facility, and Mark Buehr is working now to develop, I guess you might say, phase three of that whole thing. Oh, I think we're just on the cutting edge of this whole thing. For some of us who went back and knew that struggling, you know, even taken to elected officials, there was a long time here. Even my friend Tommy G, I have a picture at home in my den of Tommy and I sitting in a press conference in his boardroom talking about getting funding for this Windfound Foundation. And he was in favor of it, but he didn't really understand what we were really completely doing. He was looking for a 3,000 plant Saturn plant.
Yeah.
And then by the time he got to his 12th year as governor, he looked over one day and saw Bill Linton, who went through the very first one, who was 2 inches tall and has grown up to be a 7-footer. All of a sudden, they started to become believers, and the research park.
This is Promega president?
Yeah, Bill Linton is president of Promega. And I always use him as an example, because there is a high-tech company we got in the area that's any more successful than they are. And it takes a special place with me because he went through the very first one with us. But You know, and now there are a number of other research parks growing. Fitchburg's trying to put one together. A lot of the developers around town have joined into it. And all the ingredients are here for it to be even more successful in the future.
What about the Old Sauk Trails development and so forth?
Well, George DeLamas has been extremely successful out there in that. High Point out across from American Family. American Family's 850-acre site is another one. I mentioned Fitchburg, Jack Kelly. That's the old Kelly family farm out there somewhere. And now at the Fitchburg, Tom Dolan, who used to be over here at the Wiseman Center.
Terry Dolan,
excuse me, is out there trying to put that one together. So, you know, especially in this whole biotechnology area, led by our stem cell discussions here with Jamie Thompson and others, you know, those are all important ingredients with it.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Certainly.
Obviously, it's an ongoing story. So.
It is.
Yeah. Another 20 years, you and I will get together to talk about.
Oh yeah,
what we
you know, I'm a young guy like you.
Yeah, right.
You'll still be around here. You know.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, sure. No. I enjoy it. And the interesting part of it is that you could write this whole thing without talking to anybody because you lived through this whole
thing. No.
Well, I mean,
have my own rather narrow vision of things, so I need to.
Well, you are kind of narrow. I've always known that about you.
Okay.
But you know, there was a lot of.
We better quit while we're both ahead.
Yeah. There's a.